The address this week is titled, Stepping Over Our Boundaries. We all know Austin Clark's poem, The Planter's Daughter. And it's one of the great depictions, I believe, of boundaries between people. People who are legally of the same citizenship and village, and who, if nothing else, share the same sky. There's no physical barrier between them, except in the sense of property rights, but there is a massive cultural and religious one, fueled by ancient myths and perhaps sexual speculation. A planter, of course, for those not familiar with it, was someone whose ancestors had been given land by an English monarch hundreds of years ago. You know how the poem goes. When night stirred at sea and the fire brought the crowd in, they say that her beauty was music in mouth, and few in the candlelight thought her too proud, for the house of the planter is known by the trees. Men that had seen her drank deep and were silent. The women were speaking wherever she went, and a bell that is rung, or a wonder told shyly, and oh, she was the Sunday in every week. In 16 wonderful lines, Clark portrays how the men in deep thought as they drank, and the gossiping women, regarded the planter's daughter, who was protected from their curiosity by the trees. No one seemed to communicate with her, even though, as the poem said, she was not too proud. And interestingly, the poem does not describe what the planter's daughter herself thought about the men and women outside the trees. But you can almost feel her sense of longing for a casting off from the restrictions of her tribe. Restrictions which curtailed her to her own group. In the early decades of this state, many Protestants were encouraged to keep a low, even cringing profile. According to Ian Dalton and Eden Milne, and the references are in the text if anybody wants them. And this was in the context of public comments like those of a man called J.P. Ryan, secretary of the Catholic fundamentalist group Maria Duce, who said that all non-Catholic sects were false and evil. Protestants, it was said, should keep themselves warm by huddling together in their own social, economic, and cultural arenas. And there was an underlying sense of otherness and isolation often characterizing the Protestant psyche. Indeed, a parallel universe, a Protestant free state, if you could put it that way, existed within this emerging country, a country which happily handed over medicine and education to the Catholic and Protestant churches. Just as in Belfast, a Catholic wouldn't buy a Protestant loaf of bread from the Ormo Bakery. In Dublin's cattle market, Protestants sold Protestant cattle, and Catholics sold practically all Catholic cattle. It was a feature of Irish life until the 1960s that nearly every organization, business or club, was clearly defined in people's minds as either Catholic or Protestant. Although social class was often a key issue, where families in trade, as well as Catholics and Jews, could be barred from golf clubs. We mention these vignettes from our past to illustrate, if nothing else, how any group, we in this church perhaps, can become a club. How we can create our own boundaries. Boundaries which prevent us engaging with the outside, or which, however subtle, discourage outsiders engaging with us. Bill Darlison, our revered former minister, once posed the question, are we not overwhelmingly middle class and white? Nothing wrong, of course, with either. But maybe his comment is a nudge for us to shake the boundaries, those we decline to climb over and those which discourage others to climb over to us. And let's just look briefly at two historical figures who I think epitomize people who climbed over boundaries with great courage. The first, we'll know Kathleen Lynn, who set up St. Ultan's Hospital for the poor and the mothers and children. And it's only a 7-minute walk from here, the site. She was the daughter of a Church of Ireland clergyman and throughout her life was a devout member of that church. She had a comfortable upbringing with the aristocratic connections. She was educated abroad in Alex in Dublin and what became the UCD Medical School. She became the first female doctor in the Ioneer Hospital. And until St. Ultan's was set up in 1919, by the way, with only £100 and two cots, she met quite considerable gender discrimination. And then there was her Sinn Féin activism. She was chief medical officer in the GPO during the Rising, with the Irish Citizen Army. She campaigned for women's suffrage and later became a TD. And I suppose if there's one lesson to be taken from her life, a woman who assuredly climbed the barriers, it is that sometimes we need a nudge to do it. One nudge for her was her work with the suffragettes and in the soup kitchens in Liberty Hall in the 1913 lockout. Indeed, sometimes, like Dr. Lynn, if we are to be true to ourselves, we may also suffer estrangement for years from our families. In her case, because of her nationalism. And it's not clear either how her relationship with Irene French Mullen was regarded all those decades ago. And another nudge for her was, which what made her became a doctor, was seeing the poverty of people in the west of Ireland. She was absolutely shocked, and about infant mortality. So she broke social, political, gender, and traditional gender preference barriers, losing perhaps some historical recognition because she was a woman and a Protestant. An equally remarkable person who broke the boundaries was, of course, Roger Casement, who, during his service with the British Crown, unearthed Belgian atrocities in the Congo and the cruelties against indigenous Indians in the Amazon Basin. Here was a contradictory figure, described as neither fully Irish nor English, baptized as a Catholic and a Protestant, betrayed by his only significant relationship, desperate for love but for forbidden intimacy, an English establishment diplomat, yet an outsider who fought for Irish nationhood. And of course, we all know that he was hanged and had to suffer the humiliation of his homoerotic diaries being published. But of course, we don't have to be heroic leaders to be breakers of boundaries. As Unitarians, perhaps we have an additional impetus obligation to climb over and encourage outsiders over our boundaries. Having no creed and being free thinkers of liberal intent, we should be able to go the road less travelled. Jerry Hussey, a performance psychologist, writes about how we have a deep need to feel included and accepted, and we will do anything and everything to stay in our tribe. This is why we begin to replicate the accents, the habits, and the mannerisms of those around us. We need them to know we are one of them. And Hussey says that most people, when exposed to a different set of beliefs, our norms can quickly reject new ones as a way of staying affiliated to their original tribe. As the beliefs we hold go on to shape so much of our lives, it is vitally important, he says, that we not only examine our strong beliefs regularly, but that we are always willing to accept that even our most deeply held beliefs about ourselves and the world may not be true. Ralph Helverson, who's often quoted, tells us that the abiding thing we know is that what we hold as truth will change over time. So accepting that belief changes, accepting that there are other worlds besides our own, which for whatever reason we have not encountered, our task is perhaps to engage with those who come upon us or seek out those on the other side of the boundary. And this opportunity arises in many arenas of our lives. Let's look at moral and ethical issues. How many times have we allowed our ethical stances to remain stagnant? We can use other words, loyal, traditional, authority-based, or even lazy, when challenged by new ideas or evidence. How often have we been tempted to ridicule and decline to engage with the deeply held views of fundamentalist participants, many millions of them, which, if you want to engage with them, you can see them on God TV, 814, 815 if you have Virgin. It's quite interesting. What barrier has stopped us, lack of courage maybe, from seeking forgiveness for hurts we have inflicted? I think particularly with some admiration of the teaching nun who profusely apologized 40 years later for harassing a child because of her illegitimacy, as we termed it then. How many of us had ethical challenges when considering how to vote in a referendum? Have we been prepared to make a moral leap? Or indeed, have we leapt over the boundaries of our upbringing and culture? And of course, culture. How intolerant can we be of other cultures? Cultures which, at first glance, might appear odd, even cruel and self-denying, life-denying. And aligned to that, we could ask ourselves, are we unthinkingly accepting a Western view of conflicts, even those involving what have been termed rogue states? We mustn't forget, too, that those most closely aligned with us, culturally, socially, geographically, do propaganda too. Are we prepared to look through what in another context was called the paper wall, one of the reasons for the establishment of the Irish press? Do we ask ourselves questions, those which might go against the grain of perceived wisdom, and indeed might offend some people? Is the expectation of lifelong marriage unrealistic? Is all human life equally sacred? It is said officially that travellers are an ethnic group. Is that so? With the world as it is there a right to conceive a child? And of course, without the child's consent. What is so good about a united Ireland? And social class? Do we engage comfortably with people of all social classes? We've moved on from the days when the Protestant Committee of the Bull Island Golf Club had to make delicate calculations on who could become a member. Other things being equal, families in trade, Roman Catholics and Jews were excluded. But then, on Roman Catholics, there was some flexibility, as there were many good families, it was said, who dug with the wrong foot. And of course, we now rarely have the boundaries that sometimes had to be negotiated between prospective husbands and wives, often in the farming community. A farmer's son or daughter, some decades ago, would never marry, quotes, beneath them. although the child of a wealthy farmer might marry the son or daughter of a struggling poor farmer, if the economic gap could be bridged. We are now, thankfully, no longer in a world where sexuality was said to be always saturated with original sin. Ferdinand Mount said that according to Augustine, the Christian married couple ought to descend with a certain sadness to the task of begetting children. And another doctor of the church, Ambrose, said the loss of virginity was an irredeemable pollution, and the perpetual virginity of Mary was essential if our human bodies, scarred by sexuality, were to be redeemed by Christ. So our society has moved on in this area, but there are still boundaries to be crossed, or at least tolerances to be hoped for in regard to sexual activity. Some might include acceptance of all gender preferences, different modes of sexual practice, and indeed concepts of coupledom and relationships, all of course with the expectation of consent and safety. And to conclude, as Unitarians, believers in the need to examine the received wisdom on that which is said to be true, it is perhaps time to examine the isolation of the planter's daughter. Why, if she was the Sunday in every month and was not too proud, did the drinkers and the gossiping women not engage with her and she with them? We perhaps think we know the answer. Religion, history, class, culture, suspicion. It might seem strange in today's terms, but knowing that might remind us to be aware of the boundaries within us and how we deal with them. We've outlined the records of Kathleen Lynn and Roger Casement, and their heroism is, of course, not for everyone, but it is a nudge to encourage us to question our tribe, to engage with those of starkly contrasting views, different social and economic class or culture. And we can be helped to do this, says Montaigne, by waking up from the sleep of habit. This great world, he wrote, is the mirror in which we must look at ourselves to recognize ourselves from the proper angle. For him, jumping to a different perspective was a way of waking oneself up again. His favorite device was to run through a list of wildly divergent customs from around the world, marveling at their randomness and outrageousness. In such a way, we might, by understanding the other, be more likely to reach over barriers, to encourage others to come over to us. In such a way, we might engage with those in the house enclosed by the trees, or if living within that house, might engage with the outer world, however strange that might seem to be at first. Thank you. Amen.